Call this meeting of the subcommittee to order. I guess we'll just have the record reflect that all members are present. Now I can't, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble finding my agenda. I had it in a tab. That's my next item here.
So public comment is next.
Okay. Let's do that. So we'll now open up for public comment. If there's anybody, do we have anybody, I guess, in person with you, Kathleen, in your office?
Nope, there is no one online nor in person.
All right. And I don't see anybody online either. So we will go ahead and, looks like we have somebody joining. So we'll again call for public comment. Is there any public comment to anybody would like to make public comment right now? All right. Well, with that, we will close public comment, and we'll move on to the next item on our agenda, which is approval of the agenda. I will accept a motion to approve the agenda.
That's so moved, Steve.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right, great. Move on to item 4, approval of the minutes. The minutes from our last and first subcommittee meeting. I didn't see anything in there I specifically wanted to change, but do I have any changes from either of you?
Move to approve.
No, I would second if that's a motion.
All right. I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion passes. Moving on to the next item on our agenda, which is to review and discuss the changes in the decertification standards for CCS verifiers finalized for the next Sagebrush Ecosystem Council meeting. And this is an item for possible action. So we have two documents to consider. There is the markup of the Sagebrush Ecosystem Program verifier decertification process, and then the draft changes that would be proposed as changes to the Nevada Administrative Code. Are there other documents that I'm missing, or are those the two?
Nope, those are it.
Okay, great. All right. So,
if I'm...
Kathleen, go ahead. Yes, please.
If I may, just a little bit of update from last time. I met with and spoke with our DAGs, both Nicole and Greg Ott, to discuss some of the questions that you all had last time, and to go through some of the changes that we made just to make sure that they were appropriate changes. And a couple of answers to your questions. One of the questions was, is email enough of a documentation to confirm a verbal warning? And they said yes, an email is fine. You don't need to confirm a verbal warning, but if you would like to, just for document's sake, an email works, or any kind of written paper means, etc., works. So that is included in there. One of the questions was, is there a legal definition of seriously detrimental, number 6? Our DAGs said maybe take out seriously, because it was hard to define the word seriously, and just leave as detrimental. So we did so. And then we asked if this, all of our decertification process, if that can be just placed, if it can be referenced in the NACs or NRSs, and they said that it could, but it wouldn't be as defensible as if you put the whole thing into the NACs. And they highly recommend putting the whole thing into NAC as is, so that it can be defensible if decertification should come to play. So that's why I put added to the NACs how they're certified, the process that we go through currently to be certified, and then the changes that were made for the decertification process. So it's just more of like a, this is what it would look like in NACs should we decide to go through that process. So that's up to you guys today if you want to initiate that process. It was suggested to do sooner rather than later if we were to go through that, because at this given point, while it can be defended, Nicole, correct me if I'm wrong, it can be defended, it's not as defensible as it could be.
You know, I'm just going to leave your statement. I don't want to comment on that.
Okay, that's fine. And then one more thing that we worked on and we changed is that our DAG suggested under the causes for disciplinary actions as follows, they suggest that we kind of reduce that down into not as many, just more of a try to combine things that are similar. So we worked on that as well, combining some of the disciplinary actions down to a small handful of statements instead of a huge long one-page list. So that those were pretty much the main answers to your guys' questions. We did get direction from our DAGs that we might want to look into making the certification process a little bit more challenging or beefed up instead of relying on the decertification process. So that's something to consider as we go through this as well. That's all I got.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the subcommittee? Go ahead, James.
Just one. On the third page, the deletion of F, if the verifier still requests the finder of facts may be changed to the Sagebrush Ecosystem Council and the hearing can be held at the next public meeting. I kind of agree with getting rid of that, but what was the reasoning?
It was moved up to the beginning.
Okay. We just re-flip, moved it up higher. All right.
That correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm looking at it at the beginning of that section under number 5. It now says, or if the verifier so requests, maybe change to the SEC in the next public meeting. So it moved that language to the beginning of that section rather than further later on in the section.
It was in the initial paragraph of 5 rather than being a subset. Okay, it makes more sense reading it that way. That's what I was thinking too. All right.
Yeah, I think it definitely reads better now.
I appreciate all the hard work everybody did making these additions and corrections and changes and making sense of everything we said last time. Appreciate that.
Of course.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, the minutes I think are appropriately, there was a wide-ranging discussion and would have been really tough to capture in any kind of an organized way. So yeah, this was pretty impressive to boil this down.
Mr. Subcommittee Chairman, if you have no comments, I'm willing to make a motion if you're willing to accept it.
I still have comments.
Yeah, but, Kyle. This is Steve.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Just one real quick. And in my notes, I have it under page 2H, but I'm not finding it here. I'm actually reading it off my phone. But it says, you guys help me out, Kathleen. This is something to do with according to the rules. And I just wanted you to brief me on what rules. Do you know, have any idea where I'm at?
I do not. You said 2H, which would have...
2H, which isn't here, is it? I'm not finding it. There isn't a 2H anymore.
There isn't a 2H anymore.
There's a new 2H that says violation of any rule of the Sagebrush Ecosystem Program.
Yeah, right. That is what I was talking about. Thank you.
Go ahead.
No, you're that was my question. I just wasn't sure what you're referring to.
any rule regarding like NACs or anything in our manual that is set as a standard, as a requirement, the violation of such.
Okay, so rule would just be a general word.
Correct.
Anything in the document. Okay, no, that's fine. It kind of made it sound like there were a set independent rules or something, and I wasn't sure what that was, but that's fine. Not good, Kyle.
Okay, thanks, Steve. And I guess I had a couple of questions. The first one I want to ask, so looking at the proposed additions to NAC 232-480, and so if you go down, see, it's not specifically numbered, but where it says it's about two-thirds of the way down the page, the program manager may refuse to certify an applicant or after examination may refuse to certify an eligible person. Does everybody see where I'm looking at?
Yes.
Okay. So my question here, well, I guess first of all, before I get into that specifics, this section, basically starting on this page and continuing to, I guess, the, or, you know, most of the beginning of this first page, are these standards that you are currently using for certification of verifiers?
That is correct. These are the current standards that we have used since the inception of the program. I provided these standards the last meeting, I believe, of what is the requirement for certification, and then the rest of it, the rest of that page and a little bit of the next page. Well, not really the next page, that's the finder of fact, but that page is the standard of what we utilize currently to certify a verifier.
Okay, great. That's what I thought. And I don't, you know, all of this makes sense to me. I guess the one thing I wanted to have a discussion on this page is that number four under that program manager section that I talked about. After, you know, I looked at it and, well, walk you through my thinking on this. And obviously, Kathleen, I sent you an email on it and you responded right back to me. So I appreciate that. But it said that, I guess I was curious why we would have a standard in there for number four, has demonstrated an inability to submit complete projects that meet Sagebrush ecosystem program standards. So my question was, if they haven't been a verifier before, this wouldn't be a situation where you'd have that kind of evidence. Now, Kathleen responded back to me that we recertify verifiers, so this could come into place on a case where you are recertifying and you had demonstrated, you know, an inability in the past, or, you know, as this line reads. But then after getting that explanation and then hearing the discussion this, you know, a couple of minutes ago, that some of the advice from our attorneys is that we should look more at the, I guess, the certification procedures on the front end. When I read this line, if we're going to put into this place this ability that on recertification on a yearly or 5 year or however we're going to be recertifying, that somebody could be denied certification because they've demonstrated an inability to submit complete projects, it kind of takes away the need for any of this in the first place. And I like what we've done other than that with setting up a actual process where, you know, people can be told of the problems that they might be creating, have the ability to remedy those, have a process if they don't do that. We've worked to set up that process so that if there is the allegation that a verifier is submitting bad work, they have the ability to fix that, or they have the ability to contest and say, actually, I'm not doing that. This leaves a lot of discretion. And it really kind of undermines what we've been working on, in my opinion. So I had not seen this line before. I think it's an error to have it in this section. That obviously if somebody comes for recertification and they lack the specific requirements and they can't pass the test or they don't have the specific certifications, then you can refuse to certify them. But there's a lot of gray area in demonstrated inability to submit complete projects that meet Sagebrush ecosystem program standards. I thought that's what we've been discussing for the last couple of meetings on this subject.
Council member, thanks for bringing that to our attention. You know, this, I think you hit on something that's important we need to look at. This line in particular is something that Kathleen and I looked at as something that needed fine tuning. I did work on a replacement for the section. If the applicant has been certified, verified in the past, has the applicant been, now that I read it, it sounds
verifier, I think we where you were going
has been that. A certified, oh, okay, looked fine when I was reading it, has been a certified verifier in the past, so that takes care of kind of like your first, like, because you're like, well, it wouldn't come up unless they were a verifier in the past, right? Shown a consistent or repeated inability or refusal to comply with or meet standards set up by the Sagebrush ecosystem program. Kathleen hasn't had a chance to look at this yet, but it's kind of something that we had talked about, something similar to this. I think that it does create a discretionary type like decision that would need to be made. However, I think there's enough language in here that it's a consistent or repeated inability. So they need to have documented it. They need to prove consistent or repeated. So, I mean, kind of when you decertify someone, there's going to be a subjective level to it, but I think this helps assuage some of your concerns.
It doesn't for me. I think that what we have done with the rest of this document is we have set up an actual process that somebody would go through if the allegation was that they were showing a consistent or repeated inability or refusal to comply with. And then what we do with including such a line on the front end is say, well, if that process doesn't work, or if we don't want to go through that process, we can just not certify them the next year. And I think the process is important.
And that's an opinion for you. This is what I recommend, but this, I mean, it's a, you know, something that you, for you guys to decide and talk about. It's a valid opinion.
Kyle, are you suggesting that we take that number four off completely or replace it? What's your thoughts on it?
My preference would be to just remove the number four and leave that with the first three items there. And then if the issues that are contemplated for in number four arise as a person is acting as a verifier, then we have set up an entire disciplinary process to deal with that.
And I just wanted to chime in. There's some like very experienced regulation people here, but for those maybe who aren't so familiar with the regulation promulgation process, just to go into that a little bit. So I just want to make sure we know that, and this language doesn't have to be, this language isn't necessarily going to be our final, this is going to be in regulation language. So in the regulation promulgation process, we're going to have to go to a workshop and then have a workshop and then also a public hearing. So people are going to have people, the public verifiers are going to be able to come in and say, just like where you're saying, like, I think this is too discretionary, or I think this is like, you know, not fair. So this language isn't set in stone from here on out. We still have some working ways to go. Just want to make sure that we knew that.
No, I understand that, but what our charge was, as I understood this subcommittee, is to come up with this specific language.
Oh yeah, no. I just it wasn't in like specific reference to your comment at all. No.
Well, so, that would
taking out four One thing I'm looking at, you know, it gives the ability that if there's a severe action that is warranted, would that going away then mean that if somebody comes in there and threatens them and it involves calling the cops, you know, I don't think you need much more information. I think that person doesn't belong in the process. Is that the four we're talking about, or are you talking the different four?
No, I'm talking, so I am talking about, so this, we are discussing the number four on the proposed NAC changes. So I guess the sheet with all of the blue language. Oh, there, it's highlighted on the screen now. So it's the red. It's the red language on the screen.
Okay.
So that is separate from what I think you. What I think you are talking about, which would be number six on the verifier decertification process.
Okay. Now I'm tracking it.
And to be clear, you know, I'm not terribly comfortable with number six either, but we already had that discussion and I'm happy to let that part go so that there is a, as we'll call it, an escape valve if something that egregious were to happen.
Kathleen, where are you at on it?
What is the question?
Well, I'm just wondering how your feelings on if we remove number four.
I would pose the question to the council then. It sounds like Kyle doesn't want to front load the certification process. It was recommended to us by our DAGs to do so. And I pose, is there an alternative way to do so that you guys can recommend to maybe front load the certification process a little bit more so that we don't have to go through the tedium of the rest of it. We can kind of make it a little bit harder for or focus on the instances that are the issues on the front end so that those who have the high potential of having a problem in the back end just don't get certified. Because like my staff has said, some people can take tests really well, but they can't actually live it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess, please go ahead.
Oh, sorry, council member. You know, there's something I kind of wanted to go through and I was going to wait, but I think I'm going to jump in here. And what I want us all think about and what I want to work on right now is, for instance, like in this section, we have 1, 2, 3, and 4. And it's and you know, statutory, regulatory, when you're interpreting it, and or I don't know if anyone's ever heard of like the and or, they make a huge difference. So I just want to make sure, does the council and staff, Kathleen, are you guys looking at this as a and is a person who 1, 2, 3, and or is, no. Or is this an or?
Probably an or.
Okay, or. Perfect. Great. Okay.
Yeah, it'd probably be clearer if there was an or after each one. I know I've seen that in
that would
other
help.
Regulations. But yeah, that's how I'm thinking about it too, is or.
I agree.
Okay, and I guess to answer the question, and maybe Nicole, you can give us a little bit more information of what you mean by front loading the process. But if the idea here is that we could deal with, I guess we'll call them, underperforming verifiers by just not certifying them the next time and citing their previous work, I guess that's where I do want, you know, I'm more comfortable with us actually having a process for that evaluation rather than that being more of a subjective thing on the front end of a certification process that said, okay, you passed the test, you have the requisite certifications, but we think your work is substandard. Their work very well may be, but it also could be that there are other instances in place, and that's why I thought we were coming up with the process to kind of ferret that out and also give that verifier a little bit of a process that they could rely upon. So I don't like the idea of front loading it to where we can just bypass that process we just worked on.
You know, I think, thank you for your question, Nicole Ting, for the record. I want to be careful what I'm speaking on the record here. So I think we might be talking about two different things. I think being able to not allow a previous certifier who has shown inconsistency in the past, I don't think that's necessarily the same thing as front loading. I think we can still make it harder to become a verifier, and we don't. It's not necessarily like even if we didn't have this, it doesn't mean we're not front loading the process. It was just more giving consideration to if you make the bar higher, then higher quality is going to come in. So you're going to potentially, hopefully, be not having to decertify so many people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that higher bar is, well, your work was bad last year, which, like I said, very well could be bad, but I think the verifier deserves a chance to say, no, it wasn't, and here are the reasons why it wasn't.
Yeah, no, your opinion's totally valid. I think it's less illegal and more of a opinion type for the, I keep saying council members, but it's really subcommittee members. I guess I should.
Yeah.
For the subcommittee members to discuss.
So the next paragraph after that list of refusal does have a way for the verifier to request to be reviewed by someone else, specifically the finder of fact. So that next section does talk about that.
So why do we have a process then for decertification?
Yeah, because just in case we have verifiers who are coming in, who are going through either, like there are certain things in the list that are not just project related, more of like disgraceful and discourteous treatment, fraud, dishonesty, and misrepresentation. It's not necessarily just going through a project. The thing that we were trying to capture with the inability to complete a project at the programmatic standards is if we have a verifier who's just constantly doing the same errors over and over, and just we're constantly having to hold their hand and walk them through, and it's maybe not necessarily egregious, but it's just the same thing over and over and creating inefficiencies for the program, that a year after year, like more egregious inefficiencies in the previous year. This gives us a chance to be like, you can't handle this. We've tried training you, we tried correcting you, and you just aren't, you're making the same mistakes over and over. They might be simple mistakes, but there might be a lot of them.
I mean, I just think that sounds a lot like the discussion that we've been having over the last couple of months of the problems that we're having, which is why I thought we were creating a decertification process. I mean, there's the list of, I mean, at least in my eyes, the list of causes for disciplinary action, a lot of those are encompassed really by these items that we have under the refuse to certify. But I think made a false statement and fraud are things that you can actually prove, that are, you know, kind of a more of a bright line there. I think we need to decide which way we're going, because having both of these processes they're two separate processes, and one of them I think has a lot more has a lot more procedures in place so that you know, the so that the verifier can, you know, has a process that they can rely upon. And so that that would be my preference, but I don't think we should have both.
So again, I pose the question, is there a suggestion to beef up the certification process through this subcommittee in order to increase that quality requirement?
For me, I would say no, there is not a proposal to do that. And I don't think that was why, that's not my understanding of why the subcommittee was created.
Kathleen, just for Steve, just for clarification, what this is in reality would be dealing with a verifier that had potentially subpar work. And if they reapply, with this number four in there, you could deny it. Is that accurate? But they could still appeal it, couldn't they?
Correct.
Go through the process or not.
Yeah, it's for someone who has consistent subpar work that is showing an inability to improve, and they can appeal it. But yes, that is what it's for.
And Kyle, go ahead, Steve.
No, I was just going to say, Kyle, if they still have the option to appeal and go through the process, I don't see the problem if they can still appeal it. Go ahead.
I guess, just a point of clarification. So if somebody was denied recertification because of, say, this number four provision, they wouldn't be out for 5 years, right?
That's not specified in here. I guess that should be specified whether they can come back in or not. Like when they can recertify.
Yeah. So I guess this is my thinking on this subject, is that I think that having this number four provision, even if there is that, you know, the ability to appeal to the finder of fact, it is duplicative of the disciplinary process that we worked to set up at our last committee meeting. But it does not have as many steps in the process or ability for that person to bring forward. There's just the one step in that process. So if that's the direction we want to go, if we want to leave that four in there and then just rely on that line, and then the one appeal to the finder of fact, then I don't think that we need the entire disciplinary process at that point. It is my preference that we have the disciplinary process and we don't have this. But I don't think we should go with both. I really don't see the point of having both.
So what about a concept, Kyle? I'm trying to get to what's going on. You know, the concept that we have repeated bad actors, they can pass the test, but they fail. Can we create something in here where the program manager could request, after three recertifications to the council, that this person's license be done away? You see, I'm trying to find a way to massage that, realizing the problems that have occurred in the past, but also we've never completely, you know, what's the number of times we've completely taken away a verification of a person? That's why we're creating this process. So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Scott, what are your thoughts kind of on that concept? Giving them the ability that if someone is completely wasting their time, or do we, you know, institute a concept of the council where, or the commission, the set, where every time you have to, if we have to redo your application, we're going to add a zero to the fee. So if you continually have to, your application is so bad, it comes back and forth, there's a resubmittal fee that's heavy enough that it gets people's attention, or at least will begin to get the attention of the person who hired someone who may not have, isn't doing a great job. I don't know how to say that.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, I have no problem with your idea of taking care of it on the fee if we had that ability. But I do think that in such a scenario, if you've got somebody that is consistently doing bad work or making the same mistakes over and over again, because I mean, I understand and I know that the set, you know, people come in and they do something and say, actually, that's not how we do it. We do it this way. And that person learns and they're fine. Obviously, we're not talking about that type of person. The set works very well with the vast majority of our verifiers on that kind of stuff. What we are talking about is if there's somebody that is consistently making the same mistakes and submitting bad work, I just don't know why you wouldn't take that person through the disciplinary process that we've set up. And if this is the case and they're consistently doing bad work and that's documented, that's verified, and then take them through that process and then they're out for 5 years. I don't know why you if we're setting up this process specifically for these types of situations, then just use it.
This is Sarah Hale for the record. Would it make sense and be a good compromise to move number 4 from refusal to certify to the disciplinary action list or causes for disciplinary action?
It already is, isn't it?
I'm not sure specifically.
Incompetence.
Oh, yeah.
Inefficiency.
Or inexcusable neglected duty that creates an undue burden on the Sagebrush ecosystem program. I think it is in there. Fraud, that's in the other one. But yeah, I think that does cover it. There's violation of any rule as well, as Steve brought up.
I mean, Kyle, I can see what you're talking about. And if we're to that point, I can make the motion that we remove number 4. I agree. I think the process does need to happen, and I think it will take care of it. I understand why it's there, but I don't see a big problem removing it.
Okay. James?
I can see kind of both ways, but I also want to have consensus and have unanimous vote so that it's clearly understood that we're going to use this process, we're going to follow this process, and bad actors are going to be getting rid of, and this creates some rules and parameters. I think that's far more important than arguing about number 4. And if that's the motion from Steve, I could gladly second it if you're willing to entertain said motion.
I would.
All right. We've got a motion and a second to move forward with both. Oh, I should clarify, Steve. Is your motion to move forward with the Sagebrush Ecosystem Program Verifier Decertification process as written, and then the suggested changes to NAC minus number 4 under the Program Manager section?
Couldn't have said it better myself, Kyle. Yes.
Okay.
Before we do that, just give me 5 minutes. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Kathleen, can we go to, I just want to make sure, can we go just go through some language? Can we go to number 2? Okay. So 2, and then we have a list. Are we all on the same page that these are ands, must have and? Okay. We can either put field verifiers must have all or and.
I like that a little better. Easier.
Okay. All of the following. Okay, great. We already did it with number 5. Okay, so then we're at number 5, right? Is it go back up? So number 4, and then okay, so then there's 4.1, and then keep going down. 4-1, and then I feel like the numbering gets weird here.
Yeah, that was it. I had this corrected, and then I guess I must have saved a wrong draft or something because this was different. But the numbering, it's basically, this is like a new start of the decertification. This is the certification process, and then this is the decertification process.
Okay, okay. And then so that number two, actions are as follows, or, right?
Should it be or? I wasn't sure.
Okay. I think we're on the same page. It's or, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Okay, and the number three, they're kind of like separate. The verbal warning documents six step maybe didn't show the right. Okay, that's not really an or. I did have a recommendation of the verifiers. Last known mailing address.
Where are we looking?
Sorry, pardon me. In number four, after the word verifier, last known mailing address. Sorry, these are last minute changes. I went through this again this morning.
Should we update all their mailing addresses?
I think it just makes it more specific, and you know, people move. They want to make sure it's sending it to the, you know, recent address. Okay, so then we're at number 5B. I believe this is an and list that we're all on the same page with. Statement of time and legal authority.
Yeah, so if I put all of the following.
Great, yeah, that's great. Okay, I got it under 5 minutes. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Nicole. Sorry about that.
Very good. Okay, Nicole and Kathleen, are you clear on the motion?
Can you clarify, I think I understand what you're saying, but can you clarify that you move to recommend the current language and that this current language be applied to NACs to the council? Because the point is, are we moving this forward to be recommended to the council?
Right. Yes. The motion is that this subcommittee would recommend to the full council the adoption of both of these, or, you know, the adoption of both of these documents as written, except for the one change, removing number four from that section, as we've discussed. Is that right, Steve?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, should we think about including in our motion the ability for Nicole and Kathleen to make technical corrections in order to make the numbering correct and things of that nature?
Absolutely.
Given said ability, would you agree with that amendment, Steve?
Yes.
I'll work on that. Sorry.
Okay.
All right. Well, we've got a motion and a second. Are we clear, staff?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. All those in favor? Aye.
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 All right. Thank you, everyone. That brings that ends agenda item number 5. Number 6 is review of action items and future agenda items discussed during this meeting and scheduling the next meeting. I don't think we need another meeting of this subcommittee, but please tell me if I'm wrong.
I'm not sure how to dissolve a meeting. I left that in there in case you decided we needed more changes.
So, Nicole, do we have to have a next meeting to approve the minutes of this meeting? Then how do we have the next meeting without having minutes of the next meeting? I'm kind of confused on that.
Oh no, why'd you ask that question? How do we approve the minutes if we don't have a next meeting?
I believe that we're going to ask the full commission to dissolve the subcommittee, which then should take care of itself, correct or no?
Yeah, let me. Okay, so at the larger committee meeting, we're gonna make a recommendation. Okay, we did the procedures. It'll be dissolved. Yeah, I think that's good. That's good. Yeah. Thank you.
Does someone have to approve the minutes of this meeting, or does the dissolution of the subcommittee automatically approve the minutes?
Or can the full council approve the minutes?
I think the full council would approve the final minutes.
Yes.
Because otherwise you're in a circular firing squad, because at that meeting you'll have to approve the next meeting. So yeah, I always tend to go down that road. At least that's what I've seen in the past with subcommittees. We turn over our results to the full committee. They dissolve us, and then they would, as a group, kind of stamp the last minutes.
Makes sense to me.
Tell me different. I don't know.
No, yes. You're right, Director. Yeah.
Will we have minutes in day after tomorrow to approve?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Realistically, I mean, that's a tight time frame for these guys to turn around. I don't know. Kathleen, what's your theory?
We will try to get it done as soon as we can.
The worst problem you have, though, is that that's not agendized.
Mm-hmm. That was my next question.
I'm afraid they could probably turn it around for you, but I don't think legally they can put it on the agenda, whether we can vote on it without having agenda.
Yep.
Unless
Nicole, is it, can it fall under, because we do have an agenda item for bringing forth the recommendations from the subcommittee to the full SEC, can the approval of minutes just fall under that agenda item?
Oh, as much as I'd like to say, yeah, I think that's because it's a little bit too specific, that the recommendations. So we'll probably have to do it at the next one. Oh, we'll have to do it at the next one. Okay, the next full SEC.
We'll have them ready for the December SEC meeting, and just have the full committee or the full council approve the subcommittee's agenda or minutes. Sorry. Too many.
Nicole, you could potentially look into, does the chairman have the right to entertain a motion at the full meeting to dissolve the subcommittee, or does that have to be agendized too? In the past, the meetings I've been involved with, the dissolution of a subcommittee was just something you could do. It didn't have to be an agendized item. Creation required an agenda item, but dissolution did not. But I just wanted to see what your opinion was.
I think we can dissolve it. I think that's part of the recommendation. I mean, we're recommending that we dissolve.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Thanks, Director.
Do you want a motion for recommending dissolve?
I think that can just be done at the full committee myself, Kyle.
Yeah, I think these are all creations of the chairman.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in that case, not seeing anything. In the minutes, not seeing anything else that comes under agenda.
Public comment? Kyle froze up, I think.
No, you did. You froze, Kyle.
We were so close.
I thought we were done playing freeze tag, but it was
so close.
Kyle, are you all right?
As the unofficial vice chair, would it be okay if I took over and open this up for public comment?
Yes, we still have a quorum, so yeah.
In that respect, is there any member of the public who would like to make a comment at this time? Seeing none, we will admit Kyle Stevens back to the thing if someone already did that. Kyle, if you can hear me, I'm going to turn it back over to you. We've already done public comment. We're waiting on number 8 at German, if you can hear me.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. The internet in my office is awful. And so I decided to go out at the worst possible minute. So I will accept a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Thank you, everybody, for your work. I'll see you in a couple of days.
See you soon.
Bye. Bye.